be so impressed, little snipe, Artan teased. I could have told you these things within a moment of meeting your king. He hates smiling and never laughs. It's not a stretch to assume he lacks friends. Why have you brought them to me? Isuke demanded. Are they an offering? At that, Sherzad placed a hand on her dagger, ready to bolt, while Khalid unsheathed his shamshir without hesitation. Artan sighed loudly. Don't bother, boy, Isuke said to Khalid, her tone imbued with sinewy softness. If I wanted to kill you, you'd be dead already. You came in the company of my nephew. That alone makes you worthy of interest. But the girl has a mystic's blood in her veins, and you have a black cloud around your soul. I would hear you out before I make a decision as to what to do about you. When Khalid still did not lower his sword, Artan turned to look him in the eye. I promise no harm will come to Sherzad while we're here. Solemnity hardened his expression. On my father's grave, I swear it. Isuke's shoulders stiffened. Artan's promise had offended her, or intrigued her. Sherzad could not be certain, but neither possibility gave her much reassurance. Yet it appeared Khalid was not of the same mind. He returned Artan's unflinching stare for a time, and, just when Sherzad had decided the situation had taken a turn for the worse, Khalid relaxed. The muscles along his jaw ceased to ripple. His sword fell to his side. Why have you brought them, son of Tolu? Isuke's voice had gone even softer. Dangerously so. The flint in her eyes darkened to obsidian. And why are you making such promises on their behalf? The boy is cursed, Aunt Isuke. They want your help to rid him of it, as well as to find a means to restore her father's health. Artan paused. I would consider it a favor to me if you would hear them out.
A favor?
Yes.
They are that important to you?
Isuke glanced back at Sherzad with renewed interest. I told you, they are my friends. Artan hesitated for the barest of instants. And they may possess knowledge of my parents' misdeeds. Though it was carefully worded on Artan's part, Sherzad started at this revelation. Khalid eyed Artan, his expression darkening. A strange flash of emotion passed across Isuke's face. It was gone before Sherzad could place it.
Very well. As a favor to you, I will hear them out.
Her features hardened.
But I expect the same courtesy when I make a request of you in the future.
Artan gave her a curt bow in response. Then Sherzad took a position on the woven rushes opposite Isuke, with Artan kneeling to her left. She glanced up at Khalid expectantly, and he finally sat beside her, his shamshir close. The sorceress listened as Sherzad relayed the sad tale of Ava and Khalid, of their arranged marriage and the heartbreaking loss of their child, of Ava's desolation and eventual death. Of Ava's father luring Khalid to his home, where he took his own life in exchange for the dark magic to enact the curse upon Khalid. When Sherzad finished, she turned to Khalid. In a terse voice, he recited the curse's terms, sharing how he had begun to fulfill it, but could no longer be subjugated to the whims of a vengeful madman. The entire time, the sorceress's only reaction was the same bird-like tilt of her head. When they were done, she removed a sheaf of papers from her desk with calculating slowness.
A curse is payment for a debt owed, a deal made, however unfairly, Isuke began. In this case, a man's life was given as payment for its magic. If the magic is to be rendered powerless, an offering of equal weight must be made.
Then I must die, Khalid spoke as though he were resigned, as though he had expected it.
Every muscle in Sherzad's body pulled tight, a litany of protests formed in her throat. Isuke's mouth curved downward in what she must have considered a smile.
No, I did not say that. If it were that simple, a life for a life, this curse would have ended many dawns ago. Curses are rarely that simple.
She placed an oval mirror the size of two hands on the table. Then she laid both palms beside it. The mirror seemed to rise of its own volition. It turned to reflect Sherzad and Khalid before it began to spin very slowly, as though it were hanging from the ceiling on an invisible string.
I am saying, Isuke continued, that magic mirrors itself, both in power and intent. Like every mirror, all magic has a dark side, a side that can be tricked into seeing what it wishes to see.
For a moment, she seemed amused by her own words.
In magic and in life, deceit is often the best way to defeat one's enemies.
The mirror spun, slowly, lazily. It flashed silver as it met Sherzad's face, before catching Khalid's reflection. Then the mirror's dark side passed, whirling around in another play of light and shadow. Sherzad blinked. When she glanced to her right, she noticed Khalid's brow had furrowed in concentration, as though the mirror had become a complex riddle he intended to solve. Isuke's voice faded to a languid drone.
Thus, if you wish to determine an appropriate counterpoint for this curse, you must delve beneath its surface.
I don't understand. The revolving mirror caught Sherzad's attention once more, flashing before making another slow turn. Light and dark, Sherzad then Khalid, again and again. Sherzad grew dizzy. The scent of lemons and mint filled her nostrils and spread into her chest. Her eyelids began to droop. A heaviness slid around her, like a second skin, as though she were on the verge of falling asleep, or drifting in that space between dreams, where she was aware of what was happening around her, but had no control over it. In that moment of suspended weightlessness, an unwanted presence entered her mind. It was as though a hooded figure had ambled into the haze of her bedchamber, rummaging through her things like a thief in the night. When it failed to find what it was looking for, it turned in her direction. Sherzad gasped. It did not have a face. Where there should have been features was instead a blank oval of ivory, like a polished eggshell. The faceless intruder glided toward her, then led her into a misty corridor, glancing through open doors to its left and right. The rooms within were filled with Sherzad's memories. All the times she'd fought with Shiva or Irsa, made a point to return Rahim's good-natured grumbling, listened to her mother recite stories, disappeared for a stolen embrace with Tariq, read books alongside her father, cried alone in her room. The intruder dwelt on some of the moments she'd shared with Khalid, many of the nights she'd told him tales by lamplight, contended with him over matters of the heart, while tearing bread into tiny pieces. All the times she'd kissed him, in darkened alleys and behind veils of shimmering gossamer. The interloper lingered for a spell on their first kiss in the souk, as though it had come to the same understanding as they had in that instant. Her intruder soon developed a keen interest in any memory of her father. It watched without eyes as Jahandar presented Sherzad with the single budding rose from his garden, the afternoon she'd first come to the palace at Ray. It leaned in closer, eager, while Jahandar coaxed the rose to life, only to bring it past death with an unwitting turn of his wrist. After that, the intruder searched with purpose through the misty hallways for Jahandar al-Khaizuran. Soon it came across the memory of the day before, when Sherzad had pressed her father for information on what had transpired the night of the storm in Ray, on what Jahandar had done to his hands, to his hair, to Irsa's horse, to the very storm itself. His eyes aflame, Jahandar had shown her the book he'd kept pressed to his chest all this time. He'd removed a black key from around his neck and unlocked the tome to shine a slow-spreading silver light upon his face. From beyond the white haze, the faceless intruder reached a cold hand to tightly clench Sherzad's wrist, tightly enough to draw pain. Sherzad stifled a cry. "Aunt Isuke!" Artan thundered. "That's enough!" The sound of broken glass scattered the weightless drift in Sherzad's mind, bringing everything back into stuttering focus. Her eyes flashed open. She was brought out of a world of hazy white smoke. The first thing she noticed was the imprint of a hand on her wrist, red and throbbing and real. Sherzad blinked hard. When she glanced up, her heart plummeted into her stomach. Both Khalid and Artan were on their feet. Khalid's sword had been hurled across the room. It was embedded in a far wall at an odd angle, its jeweled hilt still shuddering from impact. Isuke's ominous mirror was in pieces around them. Sherzad knew Khalid had shattered it. Somehow, he had managed to break whatever control the sorceress had over him and had destroyed her mirror in an attempt to stop her. In response, the sorceress had flung Khalid's sword far out of reach. Now Artan stood between Khalid and his aunt. "He did nothing while his aunt stole into my mind. Where do Artan Temujin's loyalties lie?" She initially thought Artan had stepped between Khalid and his aunt to prevent Khalid from attacking her. But Sherzad realized she might have been mistaken. Artan seemed inclined to side with them, not with his aunt. His back was to Khalid, and only a fool would turn his back on his enemy. Artan was not a fool. At this moment, his expression revealed a complicated mixture of resolve and remorse, as though Artan knew he had erred. So Artan had not stepped before Khalid to stop him. He had stepped before him to save him. He had chosen to side with a boy he barely knew over his own family. But why? Sherzad's gaze drifted to the sorceress seated across from her. "It's clear Isuke meant to rob me of my thoughts. To what purpose?" The sorceress remained with her back as straight as an arrow and her hands upon the table, unapologetic. "You promised," Artan said, his voice laden with accusation. "You promised it would be nothing more than a search for the book. I did not make any promises." Isuke's reply bordered on serene, despite its biting undertone. "You did. In any case, the girl is not hurt." "You're lying," Khalid replied in a savage whisper. "She cried out." "I'm not hurt. I was startled," Sherzad said. "But I demand to know..." "Your demands are of little consequence to me," Isuke interrupted. "But the book your father has, he cannot be allowed to keep it." Confusion settled across Sherzad's brow. "I don't understand. Is it the reason my father..." "Your father's wounds will heal in time, but he has unleashed something much more destructive on your world." The only change in the sorceress's affect was a shift in eye color, from flint to obsidian, then back again. "If you destroy the book for me, I will lift the curse from the boy you love so dearly. I will render its debt repaid." Though Sherzad longed to ask all the questions collecting in her mind, she chose the most pressing one. Why must the book be destroyed? Scheherazade had to know the sorceress's reasons, for she did not trust her motivations, nor did she have any intention of trusting someone who knew everything about her and had yet to offer anything in return. Isuke paused in consideration of her. That book offers nothing but tragedy to its bearer. You should be proud to bring about its demise. Forgive me, but that's not an answer, Scheherazade said in equally cutting fashion. What does this book have to do with you? My reasons should not matter so long as you achieve your goals. But I will say this. The book involves Artan's parents. When you destroy it, you will free him of their debts. These debts, of what sort are they? Khalid said, looking Artan's way. That book has brought about untold suffering and destruction, death in its most grievous form, Isuke answered, her eyes flashing. When it was gifted to a foolish king many years ago, we thought it had been lost and were glad of it. Now I would have it gone, once and for all. Her mind brimming with suspicion, Scheherazade studied the bird-like woman across from her. If you now know where the book is, why would you not destroy it yourself? Isuke almost smiled. As I learned from entering your thoughts, you are not as big a fool as I first surmised. No, Artan laughed, though he did not sound the least bit amused. She is not. I cannot destroy this book, Isuke confessed, nor can any member of my family. It is a book fashioned from the magic running through our veins. Blood freely given must be what destroys it, but it cannot be our blood. So it must be mine. Scheherazade nodded in grim understanding. And I must do it willingly. No, Khalid interjected, the angles of his profile sharpening even further. I will not... Scheherazade turned toward Khalid, prepared to meet him with resistance of her own. If there is a way to break the curse, then I will do it, and you will not stop me. Shazi, this is not your choice to make, Khalid. It is mine, and mine alone. It is your choice to do as you please. His hands balled into fists. Just as it is mine. There is no cause for you to go about this alone, and... The choice does not in fact lie with you, boy. Isuke's mouth curled downward again as she summoned her strange smile. For, ultimately, you must be the one to destroy the book, as the curse resides within you. The girl must steal it from her father, along with the key to open it. Then she must deliver them to you, so that you may destroy the book and put an end to your curse. Scheherazade bit her lower lip. And how must he go about doing that? The curse was a curse paid for in blood, Isuke replied. So blood must be paid in kind. Both now and at the time of the book's destruction. But you needn't worry. The blood offering is significant in meaning, not in quantity, and first I will need a way to carry it out. She eyed the blade at Scheherazade's waist. Give me your dagger, girl. With reluctance, Scheherazade passed her dagger to the sorceress. Isuke unsheathed the blade and began muttering to herself. The metal took on a white-hot glow, as the sorceress continued whispering in a tongue that sounded vaguely familiar to Scheherazade. Tiny symbols began working their way around the blade. Once the symbols had managed to sustain their eerie glow, Isuke shifted her gaze to Khalid. Give me your hand. Scheherazade's teeth stayed on edge as Khalid extended his palm. He did not flinch as Isuke used the glowing blade to slice a thin gash above the existing one. As the drops of crimson struck the dagger's surface, the metal changed from a white-hot blue to a fiery red. It pulsed with a heartbeat of its own, its symbols rippling with the light of a passing star. Everything around them darkened with the same sudden intensity. Her face devoid of emotion, Isuke wiped the blood away and restored the blade to its jeweled sheath. She started to return the dagger to Sherzad, but did not relinquish her hold on it. When Sherzad's hand brushed across the metal sheath, it felt as cold as death.
"Use the key to open the book, but only when you are ready to destroy it," the sorceress said to Khalid in furtive tones. "Repeat the same ritual you just saw. Use this dagger to slice open your skin and drip your blood onto the blade, then pierce the dagger through the book's pages before setting it aflame."
She stopped as if in consideration.
"The book will fight you. It will scream. Do whatever must be done to set torch to it. For the fire will take your curse with it, as the book's ashes are scattered to the winds. This I swear to you, by my name and the name of my ancestors before me."
Isuke's fingers curved like claws over Sherzad's wrist, where the mark from earlier remained. Then, and only then, did she show any sign of emotion. Her lips drew back over her teeth in a sneer. Two vertical lines appeared at the bridge of her nose.
"Do what must be done, girl. Destroy the book and free us of a terrible burden. But fail, and its weight will no longer be my family's alone."
The sorceress's eyes bled into pools of obsidian.
"But yours as well."
To slight and faint. Sherzad was at a loss. She'd tried for 3 days straight. For 3 days, she'd feigned interest in her father's book. She'd sat alongside him in his tiny tent and listened while he explained the origins of its magic. She'd smiled as he'd tried to tell her how he'd gone about painstakingly translating its pages, painstakingly memorizing its contents, all under the pretext of saving her. Saving her? A likely story, especially now that Sherzad knew his reasons for prizing the book so highly, for protecting it, even through his fog of delirium. Now that she realized how its evil paled in comparison to its possibilities. The power to smite a kingdom, to lord over others with impunity. Before, Sherzad would never have believed her father could be so enraptured by the thought of power. But the proof sat before her, day in and day out. Her father's eyes pooled with a feverish light, his scarred palms stroking over his bare scalp as if seeking a reminder of all that had occurred, all that his actions had brought about. Though Jahandar had said he did not intend for such death and destruction to strike at the heart of Rey, that all he'd intended to do was save her, Sherzad could not shake the feeling of doubt that settled upon her. For her father could not meet her eyes when he said these things. As such, it had taken all her efforts to conceal her horror when her father revealed that Reza bin Latif had requested his help with future endeavors. Future endeavors? Of what sort? Her skin crawled at the thought. Tariq's forces had already managed to secure 2 nearby strongholds along the border between Khorasan and Parthia. Sherzad had warned Khalid last night, and though he'd begun to rally his bannermen to Rey several weeks ago, the city's beleaguered state made the possibility of organizing a force to retake the border a difficult one. Rey's standing army remained in shambles. It would take time for Khalid to launch a counteroffensive. Time they did not have. So Sherzad continued to try to inveigle her father to turn over his book, to rectify the curse's blight in advance of the war. Alas, Jahandar refused to let it out of his sight. He slept with the book pressed to his chest and its key hanging from a thin chain around his neck. How was she ever to take the book from her father and deliver it to Khalid if he would not part with it even for a moment? "I should simply tell Baba the truth and ask him to give me the book." Shahrazad had considered this many times, especially that first day. A part of her had wanted to believe her father would be willing to do anything to give his daughter the love and happiness life had so often denied him. But when she looked in his eyes as he spoke of the book in such reverent tones, as he discussed the sense of purpose its magic had given him, she knew he would not easily part with it, even if it cost Shahrazad her happiness. This realization pained her more than she cared to admit. For her father had always been a good man, a kind man, a smart man, a man with so much to be proud of. Daughters who loved him, and a life still left to live. But Shahrazad knew her father's mind had fallen prey to itself, had begun to believe its own lies. So on this particular afternoon, Shahrazad went about preparing bread for the evening meal in a haze of worry. "Shazi?" Irsa said from beside her. "Hmm." Her sister sighed with practiced patience. "What are you doing?" "Preparing the dough for Barbari." "I can see that, but you're using the flour for Sengak." When Shahrazad looked down and realized her error, she almost hurled the sticky mass into the patchwork fabric of the tent. But she knew it would do little to mollify her and only create more work in the end. So, instead, Shahrazad dumped the batch of knot bread onto the floor in one fell swoop. At least that particular mishap could be remedied in a trice. It was childish, but the dough did make the most satisfying splat as it struck the ground. Irsa tisked. "I suppose we could both use a moment of rest." With that, Irsa reached for two cups and a few sprigs of mint, which she passed along to Shahrazad. Then Irsa walked behind a table laden with root vegetables. She ducked beneath a trellis strung with drying herbs before re-emerging with a small platter of tiny round cakes made from ground almonds and candied apricots, covered in a dusting of sugar. The two girls sat on the floor beside the lump of failed dough. Shahrazad mashed the sprigs of mint into the cups and poured two streams of tea. Then she snagged a tiny almond cake. "What's troubling you?" Irsa said, before breaking a crumbly cake in two. "Nothing." Shahrazad's reply was unusually sullen. "Fine, nothing is troubling you." Irsa licked the sugar dust from her fingertips. "One day I will no longer ask, and it will be your own fault." "You're becoming quite prickly. Perhaps you should stop spending so much time around Rahim al-Din Walad." Shahrazad almost grinned. "And you're becoming quite the liar." Irsa shot Shahrazad a pointed glance. "You've made so many promises to me, promises you've yet to keep." Shahrazad took a deep breath. Everything Irsa had said was true. She'd long been denying Irsa her confidence, but her intentions had only ever been well-meaning. As such, it seemed wrong to include Irsa now that Shahrazad was mired in a quandary of her own making. But in the recent past, such pride had nearly proven to be Shahrazad's downfall. Her refusal to see the truth through the tales had almost cost her Khalid's love. If she confided in her sister now, perhaps Irsa could provide the assistance she so desperately needed. Perhaps two heads would prevail where one had failed, as their mother had so often said. Or perhaps Shahrazad would rue the day she'd put her sister's life at risk for her own selfish gain. Shahrazad took a slow sip of tea and tried to swallow her doubts in a swirl of mint and sugar. "I can't continue in such a manner. Something must change. Perhaps that something is me. I need to take Baba's book and key from him." Shahrazad did not look away from her sister as she began. Irsa's eyebrows pulled together in quizzical fashion. "Without him knowing, I've taken them," she finished. "At least not immediately. Can you think of a way?" Irsa chewed on almond cake as she thought. There's a sleeping draft in the scroll of curatives Rahim gave me. Do you think that would work? Sherzad pursed her lips in consideration. It's risky, but I have been unable to come up with a better solution for the whole of the past 3 days. It might. However, I should caution you, Irsa continued. I think it will take time for Baba to fall asleep, and I don't know how effective the draft is, as I've yet to try it. She sipped her tea. Why do you need this book, Shazi? And why can you not simply ask him for it? Sherzad settled her face into a mask of false composure. It would be imprudent of her to tell Irsa everything she had learned, imprudent to trouble her sister with such painful details about her father's sad exploits. Why I need it is not... No, Irsa's mouth thinned. If you want my help, I want you to tell me your reasons. Tell me the truth. The truth is not pretty, easy, as it would seem. Irsa scoffed almost stiffly. How old do you think I am, Shazi? A mere babe in swaddling? Or a young woman able to concoct a sleeping draft? For you cannot have both. Sherzad blinked, taken aback by the simple truth of her sister's words. Irsa was right. Sherzad could no longer pick and choose what she saw in her, nor could she continue protecting her, no matter how much she might wish to do so. If Irsa was old enough to help her, old enough to while away the hours with Rahim al-Din Walad, then she was old enough to know why Sherzad needed their father's book. You're right. No matter how much I wish to deny it, you're no longer a child. It's time I told you the truth. Sherzad breathed deep and began. This time, she left nothing out. In a voice so soft it could barely be heard, Sherzad told her sister the story of the curse. Of everything the boy she loved had been forced to do to protect his people. Of all they now had to do to end a reign of terror perpetrated by a grief-stricken madman. Irsa listened in wide-eyed shock. When it came time to hear of the daunting task before them, Irsa leaned closer and cut her eyes in concentration. So I must take the book from Baba while he sleeps, then collect Khalid from Ray so that he may destroy the book and end the curse, along with this needless war. Sherzad finished, her shoulders falling forward from the burden of all she'd divulged. Irsa remained silent for a time. This is a tremendous risk, especially with so many unfriendly eyes upon you, she finally said. And things might progress more smoothly if you had help. Why don't you let me take the book from Baba while you travel to Ray? No, Sherzad shook her head. It's too dangerous. No, Irsa insisted. It isn't. It makes sense for me to do it. He won't suspect me of having any interest in the book. Let me give him the sleeping draft in his evening tea. I'll wait for him to fall asleep, then meet you in the desert. I couldn't bear it if something were to happen to you. What could happen to me? Irsa frowned. It's not as though I'm fighting at the vanguard. I'm only transporting a book, she said with unassuming brevity. Why don't we meet by the well, east of the encampment? It's a short ride from here. I'll borrow Aisha's horse, then bring both the book and the key there, and in doing so save you the trouble and the time. You can leave for Ray once I've given Baba his tea. Her voice had grown more fervent as she spoke, her words grounded in their surety. Sherzad chewed the inside of her cheek, still unwilling to relent, but warming to the idea. It does make sense, and it would be nice to work together for a change. Don't worry, Shazi, Irsa grinned good-naturedly. I'm merely waiting for Baba to fall asleep, then delivering a book to you. There's no danger in this. Despite her wiser inclinations, Sherzad smiled back. Perhaps her sister was right. They were taking charge of their destinies, refusing to allow fate to dictate their futures. Perhaps the reason Sherzad had been struggling so much of late was because she'd been fighting against a raging current. Perhaps she should swim alongside it for a change. All right, Shirzad agreed. Let's do it. Together, Irsa smiled wider. Shirzad nodded. Together. Tariq wasn't sure what could have possessed him to follow Irsa al-Khayzuran tonight. Of all the things he should have been doing, he should not have been secretly following Irsa. He should have been planning their next raid, or at least forming the beginnings of a strategy with his uncle, despite his growing unease as to Reza bin Latif's objective. Instead, here he was with Rahim, trudging through the desert on horseback, trying to keep silent. Indeed, they were fortunate Irsa was such a poor sneak, as well as a decidedly poor lookout, for any soldier worth his salt would have noticed them trailing at a distance, would have foregone this ridiculousness long ago. But Tariq had been worried about Shirzad for some time. These past few days, he'd tried to keep tabs on her whereabouts. Earlier this evening, Tariq had seen her steal into the desert, carrying a rolled bundle. Before he'd been able to break away from his soldiers and follow her, Shirzad had disappeared without a trace. Now Tariq was forced to do the next best thing and follow Irsa. For if anyone knew what Shirzad was up to with this strange disappearance, it would be her younger sister. Tariq was more than willing to resort to subterfuge if it meant learning the explanation behind Shirzad's recent behavior. More than willing to steal into the desert in pursuit of a hooded figure beneath a moonlit sky. And Rahim? It was becoming abundantly clear Rahim would follow Irsa al-Khayzuran anywhere. All Irsa had in her possession was a tiny parcel wrapped in a length of dark linen, pressed against her chest. She was not dressed for traveling. The light shamina about her shoulders would not protect her from much. Tariq found this strange because Irsa al-Khayzuran was usually quite sensible, usually not a cause for concern. She never had been, was not the type ever to be. She was predictable, pleasant, agreeable, everything Shirzad was not. All the same, Tariq kept his recurve bow at the ready, for whatever might lurk ahead. After half an hour of riding, they neared the well and the abandoned settlement where Tariq had first met Omar al-Sadiq several months ago. He briefly recalled the way the elderly sheikh had shrunk back from Zoraya's flashing talons. For once, Tariq was glad to have left the falcon behind, as she would have undoubtedly given away their presence by now. Rahim and Tariq dismounted from their horses, concealing themselves behind one of the cracked stone buildings. They lingered in a pool of shadow while Irsa tied her steed to a post near the well. Despite all, Tariq had to admit he was somewhat curious. Who was Little Cricket meeting? For Tariq could see no trace of Shirzad anywhere nearby. Rahim inhaled through his nose. Even from an arm's length away, Tariq could sense his friend's budding apprehension as though it were his own. "Why are you so concerned?" Tariq whispered. Rahim eyed the slender figure of Irsa al-Khayzuran in the distance. Tariq smothered a smirk. "She's not in any danger." "Obviously, she's meeting someone she knows. Are you worried it might be another boy?" "Why would I care if she were meeting another boy?" Rahim shot back. "I only want to make sure she's not in danger." "Of course you wouldn't care if it was another boy," Tariq rolled his eyes. "That's why you're following her in the middle of the night, like a cuckolded husband." A sound of exasperation rolled from Rahim's throat. "We both know why we're here, and it has nothing to do with..." Tariq cut him off with a hand to his shoulder. Two figures were approaching Irsa. One was easily recognizable. Tariq would know its shape anywhere. He'd spent the better part of his life memorizing its lines. Small and slight, with a messy braid, recently tousled by strong winds. The other was tall, hooded, male, less easily recognizable. Yet Tariq knew, even before the figure pulled back the cowl of his ridda, even before his hand moved to the small of Sherzad's back. Who it was. The hate flew to Tariq's fingers, coiled through his stomach. His own words echoed in his ears. Make no mistake. The next time I see Khalid ibn al-Rashid, one of us will die. Tariq did not pause to reflect. He did not stop to reconsider. Love would not blind him to the truth. His fury rising, Tariq shoved away Rahim's blind attempt to stop him and reached for an arrow. Sherzad did not like this place. When she and Khalid had first flown above the settlement surrounding the well, a strange sense of foreboding had washed over her. As they strode through it now, the feeling only worsened. All the buildings around them were abandoned. Many of the mud-thatched roofs had collapsed in on themselves, forming craters that lent an even greater sense of menace to the space. Warning any and all who dared to tread near that time would not look kindly on those who lingered. Worse, despite all her sister's earlier reassurances, Sherzad could tell Irsa was nervous. Her sister paced in a tiny circle by the well, clutching a linen-wrapped bundle to her chest. Sherzad watched as Irsa wore a smaller and smaller ring into the sand by her feet, knowing she felt the same menace in the air about her. The only thing that gave Sherzad the sense that all would be righted soon was the reassuring presence of the hand at her back, the warm, solid presence of the boy at her side. Khalid sees everything. He never fails to notice the most insignificant detail. He won't let anything happen to Irsa. Sherzad squared her shoulders. Soon Khalid would destroy her father's book. Then they could begin to right the many wrongs around them, and she would never have such cause to worry again. As they strode toward the well, a sudden breeze cut through the horseshoe of abandoned buildings, slicing through the stone hollow in a frenzy of air and sound. A familiar noise ricocheted in its wake. Sherzad stopped walking. Was that a horse? For a moment she thought she'd heard the clatter of hooves in the distance. Beside her, Khalid paused as well. Then he moved past her, as though he were trying to puzzle it out. Irsa's horse stood nearby, tethered to a post, and no one else knew where they were. The breeze died down. The whorls of sand fell to her feet. But all was not right. That much was evident. Sherzad felt it on the air, just as she saw the distinct shift of shadows near a building on the far right. And she knew. She knew, with the same sort of paralyzing certainty as one who dangles from a precipice. For she'd trained in the art for years. Now was the perfect moment. The wind had just fallen, down and to the left. She could almost feel the feathered fletchings between her fingertips, the twang of the bowstring as it was pulled tight, the snap as the arrow was loosed. Without a second thought, Sherzad shoved Khalid aside. An arrow to the heart. The arrow zinged through the darkness, whistling past Irsa on its deadly trajectory. The world around her seemed to slow all at once. She saw her sister leap toward the Caliph of Khorasan, trying to push him aside. In the same instant, the Caliph grabbed her, wanting to shield her with his body. Two stubborn lovers protecting each other from the very same threat, fighting the very same losing battle. He grabbed her as she pushed him, and all was lost. The arrow buried itself in Sherzad's back. Then, just as quickly as the world slowed, it sped forward in a sudden rush. Irsa watched the Caliph catch Sherzad tight against his chest. Though his face was blank, his eyes were a summer storm, a fiery sun besieged by churning thunderclouds. A belated cry of surprise escaped her sister's lips. At the sight of the arrow quivering from Sherzad's back, Irsa screamed. The sound split the night sky in two.
Shazi!
Irsa rushed to Sherzad's side. Her sister's fingers were wrapped in the folds of the Caliph's black rida. Neither of them had yet to utter a word, their eyes fixed upon the others. Whatever silent conversation they shared was not one Irsa understood. They sank to the ground, the caliph still holding Sherzad tight against him. Irsa knelt in the dirt nearby, her heart clamoring in her chest.
We have to do something, she cried. We need to.
A rush of movement behind them spurred the caliph to action. He passed Sherzad to Irsa and stood in almost the same motion. Irsa held Sherzad, frantically studying the blossoming wound on her sister's shoulder, wondering what she should do, wondering what she could do. The grate of a sword being drawn from its sheath yanked Irsa from her tempest of thoughts. For the first time since the arrow blurred past her, she paused to truly look up at the Caliph of Khorasan, the madman of Rey, the murderous boy king, her sister's husband. He was tall, not as tall as Rahim, but taller than she'd expected. There may have been a time someone else would have found him attractive, but it was not now. Now his features were punishing in their severity, ruthless in their intent. The only emotion Irsa could discern was fury, and the promise of death hung in the air about him. He was truly terrifying, truly a monster. The sight of him looming above her, his sword poised to kill, made Irsa want to cower in a corner, like the useless mouse she'd laid claim to in the worst of her nightmares. How could Sherzad love him? Before Irsa could take in a breath to think, the caliph positioned the hilt of his sword between his palms and twisted it in two. Now he held mirror images of one sword in either hand, twin weapons to wreak twice the destruction. His eyes never straying from their lethal task, he moved before Sherzad and Irsa, shielding them from view. Beyond him, footsteps raced through the sand.
Shazi!
Merciful God! Irsa turned in shock at the sound of the two voices. Rahim and Tariq? What were they doing here of all places? How had they... Sherzad reached up to seize Irsa's shamina, her hands shaking.
Shazi?
Fending off her confusion, Irsa bent closer to hear what her sister was trying to say.
Irsa!
Sherzad choked, her fingers winding around the thin fabric of Irsa's shawl. Her lips had lost all color, and her voice was more breath than sound.
You have to stop him.
What do you mean? Irsa cried.
He'll kill them.
The trembling had progressed from Sherzad's limbs into her core. Her sister's body had begun to quake, and Irsa's hands felt sticky from Sherzad's blood.
What do I... Make them stop,
Sherzad gasped.
You have to make them stop.
Rahim had drawn his scimitar to take position before Tariq. A quiver of arrows dangled from Tariq's shoulder. Tariq had fired an arrow at them? Tariq was responsible for this? But he must have been aiming at the caliph, only to strike Sherzad. Merciful God, how had this happened? How was she supposed to stop them? It had taken her weeks to get her own sister's attention. How was she to stop a brash boy like Tariq, armed to the hilt with dreams of blood and glory? Much less stay the hand of a cold monster like the Caliph of Khorasan.
Please,
Irsa cried, a mouse's call to arms. Don't! Tariq's face had taken on a grayish hue.
Is she dead?
He asked the Caliph, tugging his fingers through his hair in anguish. It was then that Irsa realized Tariq was defenseless, save for the quiver of arrows lashed to his back. No bow to speak of, no scimitar at his side, not even a dagger tucked in his sash. Utterly useless to fight a monster wielding two swords. Alas, Irsa knew this did not matter to Tariq, not in the slightest, for it was as clear as rain. He was beyond all rational thought. The Caliph of Khorasan said nothing in response. He merely brandished both swords in punishing arcs of precision, arcs that only too well demonstrated his intent. He stepped forward. Without a word, Rahim moved to defend Tariq. Irsa shrieked as the caliph raised both weapons against Rahim. She felt her sister struggle to catch her breath, struggle to sit upright, struggle to protest.
Is she dead?
Tariq's grief caused his voice to crack through the blue darkness.
Just answer that question, you bastard, and you may do as you please with me.
Why would I do anything for you? The caliph replied, low and vicious.
Because if she's dead, I don't care what happens to me.
Then we agree on at least two things. With that, the caliph shifted his attention toward Rahim, his swords glinting on a moonbeam.
Please! Irsa screamed. Please don't! Irsa!
Sherzad yanked her closer, still struggling, her face contorted, her words a ragged whisper.
You have to yell at Khalid. Get up. Make him stop. Do something.
Irsa shook her head. He was the caliph of Khorasan. Could a mouse even dare?
Irsa!
The clash of swords rang out in the desert, the ring of metal on metal pulsing through the air. Yet Irsa remained motionless with fear, as though every cogent thought within her had been swallowed in a breath. It was over in four strokes. There was no contest to be had. The caliph of Khorasan was a demon, trained to wield blades forged in the blue fires of hell itself. Rahim tumbled into the sand, scrambling for his lost sword. Irsa's heart flew into her throat. Every part of her tingled with awareness, with inescapable realization. It would not be enough for the caliph to disarm Rahim. Not in his current state. The monster of Ray would kill Rahim to get to Tariq, to destroy Tariq for what he had done to Sherzad, and Irsa could not live in a world, refused to live in any world, where she had let such a thing come to pass. So in the end, it wasn't the pleading whispers of her sister. It wasn't the fear that coursed through Irsa's blood. No, it was never the fear. It was so much more than that. It was older than the desert. This feeling, and it forever put an end to the mouse's reign, once and for all.
Khalid ibn al-Rashid!
Irsa roared. All eyes whipped back in her direction.
Stop this immediately, for if you do not, I promise Sherzad will never forgive you.
Her chest heaved as her gaze fell on the boy lying in the sand, the boy who always asked the right questions. The boy who made her feel better than beautiful. The boy who gave her the strength to be a lion.
And if you hurt Rahim, I will never, ever forgive you.
Irsa finished, truth imbuing her words with a steel no sword could strike down. Even the very grains of sand seemed to yield to her, seemed to sigh back in relief. The caliph of Khorasan gazed at her for an unblinking moment. His features lost a measure of their severity. He stood straight and lowered his swords. Then, as though nothing of import had occurred, the caliph strode back toward Irsa, restoring his blades to a single sword as he walked. Rahim clambered to his feet and retrieved his scimitar before carefully following in the caliph's footsteps with Tariq in tow. The caliph knelt beside Sherzad and tried to lift her. She grimaced, the tension banding across her face. Her coloring had worsened considerably, her skin sallow, her forehead damp with sweat.
"We have to take her back to the encampment," Irsa said, determined to remain calm despite the recent tumult. "For I don't think it's wise to remove the arrow here. The wound does not seem to be terribly deep, but she's still losing a great deal of blood, and Tariq uses
obsidian arrowheads." The caliph's eyes rippled with the remnants of a passing fury. Irsa nodded.
"It's likely to worsen the more she moves. We have to do something soon."
"Shazi," the caliph reached for Sherzad, and his suddenly gentle disposition had a strangely disquieting effect on Irsa. It was as though another person had settled into his skin.
"I have to separate the shaft from the arrowhead before we move you."
Her sister nodded once into the fabric of Irsa's shamina. The caliph paused.
"It will hurt," Sherzad licked her lips.
"Simply do it and stop talking about it, you lout,"
she muttered in a barely audible tone. Irsa was almost as astonished by her sister's fearlessness as she was by the sight of the caliph's mouth tugging upward with shadowed amusement. He drew Sherzad closer, again with great care. With a quick snap, the caliph broke the shaft of the arrow as near to her skin as he could manage. Sherzad muffled a cry against him, and her shaking continued with renewed vigor.
"She's unlikely to remain conscious for long," the caliph said to Irsa in a quiet voice. "Seasoned soldiers have been known to quail long before this."
Stop talking about me as though I weren't here," Sherzad rasped through chattering teeth.
"We're only a short ride from our encampment," Irsa said. "If we
take one of our horses," Rahim said from behind them, "then ride back to the Bedouin camp with Tariq. No one will question you if you return with Tariq, so long as your face is covered. I'll ride back with Irsa."
The caliph glanced over his shoulder at Rahim. Rahim did not flinch from his cool appraisal. After a beat, the caliph stood with Sherzad in his arms. He did not say a word as they waited for Tariq to retrieve the horses. When Tariq moved to help with Sherzad, Rahim stayed him with a hand to his chest before assisting the caliph himself. Soon the caliph sat astride a dark bay stallion with Sherzad's pale figure tucked before him. Still in complete silence, the caliph pulled the hood of his ridda low onto his head and directed the horse forward, as though he intended to proceed without them. Then he swiveled Tariq's horse back in their direction. His eyes glowed down at them like embers in a fire.
"Tariq Imran al-Ziyad," the caliph began, his thinly veiled anger giving the name the rancor of an oath. Irsa saw Tariq's fists clench tight.
"Lead the way, before I rethink the matter and kill you outright."
A brother and a home. Irsa did not know what to make of her sister's husband. He was a confusing mixture of extremes, cloaked behind a black ridda. With everyone else, he was chipped ice on a mountain. With her sister, he was a summer breeze across the sea. Alas, this did little to change the fact that Irsa remained terrified of him, for she was quite certain he'd almost killed Tariq no less than 3 times since returning to the Bedouin camp. The first incident occurred not long after they arrived at Tariq's tent. Though on that score, Irsa supposed the caliph's enmity was somewhat warranted. As soon as they concealed themselves within the tent, Irsa tried to remove Sherzad's blood-stained kamis so as better to see the wound in question. Of course, it was not appropriate for Tariq to assist her with this, especially in the presence of Sherzad's husband. Surely Tariq could not have thought it was. Irsa was not quite certain why he'd even attempted to do so. Foolish at best, a death wish at worst. And in the face of a murdering madman? A death likely to come about in any number of colorful ways. Then, once the wound was cleaned, she and the caliph attempted to remove the arrowhead. Since neither of them was versed in such matters, it proved to be a challenging task, especially with Sherzad's combativeness coming to the fore. In the end, they were forced to consult with Tariq, as he had been the one to fashion the arrowhead in question, with the purpose of exacting a great deal of damage, with the intention of shredding skin and shattering bone. Irsa was certain the caliph meant to murder Tariq at this admission. Unfortunately, it did not much help Tariq's cause when he was the one to extract the arrowhead. After all, he was the one with the strongest understanding of its design, not to mention the steady hands of a skilled archer. He managed to remove the arrowhead intact, which Irsa had been most grateful to see, despite the difficulty accompanying the effort. Sherzad bit down on a piece of worn leather while it was being done, and tears stained her cheeks for the duration.
though they all witnessed Shazi curse Tariq quite soundly afterward, which implied all was on its way to being mended, Irsa was still